This is an audience suggested question. The city is interested in purchasing the Art Van building to build a marketplace. The most recent artist rendering was unveiled recently at a Downtown Development Authority meeting. Do you agree with this plan to purchase the Art Van building from the county and turn it into a marketplace? And we'll start with Trey Smith.
Well, my question wouldn't be, do I agree? The question would be, would it be helpful? And what are the projections? What is it going to do? Because again, we've been focusing a lot in our city on the downtown area, and I think that's a good thing. However, there are so many other areas in our city that we can look at, but specifically to that particular area. I think we have to look at the numbers to see if it makes sense financially, but also who will it attract, what will be put in there, and then we can identify if it's helpful. Because there'll be tons of things that the city will do. This one particular building won't change the world. However, the question is, will we inspire other investors and other people to come and do the same, rehab other buildings, rehab other properties? That's what we're looking at.
Okay. Scott?
I'm very, very proud and actually very confident in the members of the DDA are the first ones that have sat on the commission that have put some time in to come up with this type of idea, and hopefully they're continuing to do some due diligence. I think they've mentioned they're going to have a time period of, you know, 40, 60 days, something like that, for public input, and really try to get a real good grasp. One of our goals and priorities for the council that we set was, what are we going to do, or how can we, what are we going to do about that Art Van property? The concern that you have is it is such an opportune place right here in the city, in the location downtown, is really what is the potential cost going to be, but also the taxpayer dollars out of the TIFA funds. You know, I think we have slated, at least estimated budget there, about $950,000 of taxpayer money going into it. And I really want to make sure that if that's the sole thing that the city is going to put on to initiate, we need to make sure that the parties involved and the other you know, partnerships involved, that this plan is a really sound plan with projections, and that facility, as it turns out from feedback, is going to turn out to be, it really could be a centerpiece for the city of Port Huron. But the cost benefit, we have to make sure that the benefit far outweighs the cost. And that's the thing that forward looking and throwing ideas out like that to come up with, I think it's great to throw that idea out there. And I really hope that we really evaluate all options when we do this thing, and really take a hard look at what is the potential burden on the city going forward. And if there's any way to relieve that or reduce that type of thing, I think it'll be a huge win for our downtown and for our city if we can do that.
Pauline?
Sure. You know, the plan is very wonderful. I mean, it would be a great showcase. I would agree with what Trey said.
Thank you.
There you go.
Appreciate it.
And all of his comments. So I'll fast forward through those. The city was not per se planning on buying the Art Van building. First of all, there was a marketplace that was suggested and a price tag that went with it, and without private investment it would never happen. The $950,000 that was talked about would be mostly, that the city would add into that, would be mostly for the surrounding area and parking, because that would be part of it. And those monies would come from our DDA, which is collected only from those people that live within the DDA. And it's an extra two mils that all of those people pay and can only be spent in that district. So it's not general tax dollars that you or I pay with our property taxes. It's not that. It's what the people that live in that district pay to enhance that district. I certainly am in support if we have the investments from outside sources. But I certainly encourage that they are going the process and they go through the due diligence and that they have the meetings and find out if it really is a marketable item and whether or not someone is interested in investing it, because without that, it's not going to go forward.
Garth.
Well, I also seen the proposals online on Facebook or wherever they were, and they look beautiful. It looks really nice. I do like the fact that it's a multi-season thing. It's not just a Falmo's market. The Falmo market part of it concerns me a little bit about what's going to happen with the Falmo's market down at Desmond Marina, down at the Maritime Center. I would be concerned about the financing and how this is going to get paid for, but without seeing more of that, I can't really say too much. I think it would be great. Anybody that wants to build in our city, I'm going to do anything I can as your mayor to help anybody else's dreams come true. Whatever you're trying to do and build and facilitate, that's my job as the mayor, is going to be to try to help people be successful. And if somebody's trying to build this and has got money, I'm definitely all for it. But if it's going to cost the city residents a lot of money, I'm a little bit more cautious there. So I want to reduce our taxes and reduce our burden on our residents.
I want to go back to something that we briefly discussed before. We didn't really get into the details. Do you approve, this is from an audience member, do you approve of the city manager's proposal to address unfunded liabilities? And if not, what would you do differently? And Mr. Guernsey, let's start with you on that question.
Well, yeah, of course. I support any ideas to address our unfunded liabilities. It's our number one issue, is our unfunded liabilities. We cannot run two cities at the same time and finance them. A lot of, when people retire and being able to, like the wood, cutting down the trees and, renting that out more or less, is a great idea. You won't get all the legacy costs and stuff that we will with a lot of the city employees. I kind of forget what the question was that I was...
Would you do anything different from what the city manager has done to address unfunded liabilities?
Well, that's really what I've always ran on, is one of my big things, is our unfunded liabilities. And like I said, the main thing we need to do right now, I believe we need to do, is eliminate our city income tax and create growth back in the city. And we need to augment our city income tax by the Blue Water Bridge, by all the properties and everything, they eliminate it. I will be trying to put a soul charge on every axle that crosses that bridge to augmentate our city income tax. We won't lose no revenue. But by growing our city, that will help. And Mr. Freed's got a good plan. And I have a plan here, too, if you'd like to see it, about how to grow the south side of Port Huron and how to affect our unfunded liabilities that we went through 7 years ago. And it's the same issue and the same plan I would try to do now. I'm all about trying to eliminate our unfunded liabilities and our tax burden to our citizens.
Trey Smith, would you do anything different than what the city manager has currently done to address unfunded liabilities?
Based upon the plan that I seen last night, and I'm thinking about, I continue to hear my my counterpart here talking about removing the income tax. I think according to his plan, there's about $6 million that's raised.
Correct.
$6 million. And so without that income, what would we do? And so I'm thinking through that according to the plan, not saying that he doesn't have a plan to do that, but I'm thinking through that and saying, what would I want to see different? I think I agree with the plan. I think it's possible to do creative things and raise revenue. The only concern I have with the plan is we continue to cut city employees. That's a problem. And I get it. They cost money. But right now he said they're making amazing sacrifices. I believe that whoever wins and is mayor and is leading should figure out a way to pay those people back and get people back in the workforce and finding the resources. There has to be an answer somewhere there, because we're doing more with less. And I don't have that answer, but I know we could figure out what that answer is. So that's my only concern when we look at the balance sheet, because again, as a pastor, I never look at people as numbers. I look at them as people. I look at them as family. I look at them as an opportunity. And my question would be, what could we do to restore this income? What can we do to restore this line item in the budget? And also another thing I heard him continually say, that there were certain things we couldn't do as far as the line items because some things would be illegal. And he said he wouldn't do well in jail. And trust me, he wouldn't do well in jail. And but what could we do? How could we rally, or how could we petition to make laws different and figure out a different way? And the reason why I say that, because there have been times all the time where a politician would see a way that we can make something happen, but they would have to petition a law change. And so maybe we need to be a forerunner in that and changing some laws and figure out new creative ways of doing that.
Pauline?
Sure. Well, I do approve the plan that was submitted to us last night, certainly.
I agree with you.
Yeah. Thank you, Trey. And. But, you know, going forward, I think that we have to stick to that plan, but we also have to look at ways to increase our revenue. Of course, if we increase our revenue, then, of course, that's more money coming in. And it gets back to the amount of money. We only get monies from certain places, income tax, property taxes, and state revenue sharing. We have lost $23 million in state revenue sharing funds in the last 10 years, $23 million. That would add a lot right there. And, you know, so that's one of the things that we have to, you know, really look into, and I doubt that that's ever going to come back, put it that way. I really doubt that very much. But we need to do that, and there may be a chance that we get to bond in the future to pay off some of our unfunded liabilities, which will also open it up. And I agree with you, Trey, on the employees. We're agreeing an awful lot. And, you know, they aren't just numbers, and they have given up a lot, an awful lot. And that's one of the reasons why in the bargaining agreements, this past ones that were approved, they did get an increase of 2% and 2.5% each year. They haven't had any raises in years. It was to kind of compensate a little bit for what was going on and what they were taking away. So I commend them for that. I really do. But moving forward, you know, we have to stick to this plan, do what we can, try to get more. By the developments of different things, we'll bring more property taxes in. When we get the new blue water condos in, I mean, that's a big project. We'll get more tax money from that. I mean, if we can keep getting more money in, it will help us. So, you know, you add that to the plan, and hopefully that will, you know, come out in the future, and that we will be in a better place.
Scott Warden.
What was the question?
Do you agree with the city manager's plan to address unfunded liabilities? And if not, what would you do differently?
So the plan last night that was presented to us, council. So again, just to touch the shadow government of the legacy cost, the shadow is now not a shadow anymore. It is completely eclipsed our city and our government's financial situation. The plan last night, this is the state of Michigan. We put in for a waiver, and we were hoping to get a waiver back in April. And the state of Michigan, the actual treasury for the state of Michigan, denied it and said, no, you need to provide us with a corrective action plan. So we submitted in a plan last night, which was basically telling what we've done. Our city employees, our police, and our unions, they've come to the table, they've made sacrifice, and they actually stepped up with changing their pension multipliers and taking cuts in their pension, which definitely will release some help, which we're greatly appreciated of their sacrifice. And of course, the city taxpayers, we've went to them and they approved a three millage and an additional one millage for parks and rec, additional taxes to pay in, which goes toward our expenses. As far as the plan that has, one thing I want to make sure is very clear. We have this unfunded liability. It was $102 million before I came on board. It was $109 million the first year I was on board, and now it's $118 million. Between that and the CSO debt, we're at $188 million on the behalf of each household in the city of Port Huron. This plan also, because it's been recognized, the plan that we put in last night does have it through 2027 to get to 60% funded. And, you know, we can look at that. I look at the bigger picture. We actually only have 20 years total to be at 100%. So I hope that, yes, we submit this plan and hopefully it can be agreed to, but I'm going to tell you as mayor, we're going to have to engage everybody involved and see how we can come up with any additional contributions to that to start funding that and paying that down.
Some of the council candidates in the previous hour of this session talked about blight enforcement. So I want to ask, are you satisfied with Port Huron's blight inspection and enforcement of blight violations? And if not, what needs to change? Garth, we'll start with you.
The blight, it's not just rentals. When I ran 7 years ago, I talked about the train down by 24th Street. The grass is this high. You can still see it that high all the time. But I don't see the city going after the railroad company for blight. They always want to harass citizens that's lived here a long time. I'm awful trying to make the neighborhoods nice and try to eliminate blight, but I do believe that the owner of his property is the king of his castle too, and I do respect the homeowner's right for his home. One man's trash is another man's treasure, and we can't have anything that's, you know, unsafe or anything like that, but just if a man has sunflower seeds in front of his house, I don't think that's blight. And I have, there's been people harassed for that. I believe that the city does a good job trying to fight blight. And I support that and will continue to try to do that. I think that if we get people to move into the city that are going to be homeowners by, once again, eliminating our city income tax, more people move in here, we're going to take more pride in your home because you own your home, you're not renting. We have a big rental city because we have a low property tax multiplier and we have a city income tax. I want to help people move from having rentals to homes, and I would be awful the city trying to help people do that if they want to be homeowners. I know they got programs now for that, and I support those programs. I support people trying to help themselves to do better. But if your house is unsafe and a detriment, we're going to have to do something about that.
Scott Warden, are you satisfied with Port Huron's blight inspection and enforcement of blight violations? If not, what needs to change?
Yeah, it's actually a very useful tool, and the department does, we're constantly tweaking it. In order for us to actually have the full shining light here in the city of Port Huron, it's supposed to be a corrective measure program where you go out and you let them know and then you try to help fix or make some, it's not really supposed to be a punitive side. So we have to be out there active as far as the city code enforcement, and they need to be very respectful of our residents and our homeowners and building owners, because it is their house and it is their property. And what one person may say, hey, that doesn't look very good, the other person says, hey, I think it's kind of how I like it. So they're on the front line. They have to deal with the front intruding or basically I guess not intruding, but addressing individual homeowners and building owners. And I think the dialogue and banter should we can continue to improve more of a helpful view, more and try to relieve a little bit of that stigma or that approach of, hey, this is an enforcement, you're wrong. We need to understand that people have a lot of things on their plate. They have regular maintenance, they have expenses, and they might have something else planned. So we're constantly looking at that when we bring this up amongst council members and looking to address that program and tweak that program, which has been constant. So we need to continue it. We need to also continue to monitor the feedback and see how we can improve it and be more, make sure we're respectful of the different time frames and the individual households and also buildings that might be affected. We need to make sure that they fully understand and that we give them proper time out of respect, because they are our citizens, they are our residents, and this is their city, and a lot of them need to, you know, we need to educate them on it. So thank you.
Pauline.
Well, I think, you know, it's kind of funny in a way that we've been talking about blight for as long as I've been around, which has been since the 80s. It's something that's come up in every council election. It's always, you know, always talked about. It would be nice if we didn't have blight. Unfortunately, we do. And I think that we have great system in place. I can't say it's perfect. I just think we have a very good system in place. I think it's great that we have fix-it tickets, so that if somebody is cited the first time, they certainly don't get a ticket monetarily. They get the opportunity to correct the problem before they're actually issued a ticket. We give many opportunities for people to clean it up, if it's painting or whatever it happens to be, before it gets to the point of being a ticket. Unfortunately, we do hear about the ones where they get really bad and they don't take care of them. But I think we have, like I said before, the system in place. We do have to consider the people, you know, and their circumstances when we go out there. But we cannot waver off of the rules, because if you've made a rule and that's what it is, it's good for everybody. And if you've given 30 days to one person, you can't say, well, I'm going to give you 35 days because I think you might do it in that time. So I think it's very important that the council, you know, we have people who come and appeal their tickets, that type of thing, because, oh, something happened, but then you find out that they've been warned, and they haven't done it until it becomes D-Day. So the whole system, I think, is not broken. I just I think that we just need to maybe instill a little bit more pride in people in their homes. If there's a way to do that, I'm open to it.
Trey?
I think the system doesn't have a clear vision. And the reason why I say that is because I'm thinking about you can be cited for paint chips, paint that's chipping, you can be cited for things that are unsafe, and that makes sense to a degree. But then also you can be cited for having the wrong color tarp. And that's just interesting to me, because that's happened to one of our church members, where they were cited for having a, it's just weird, it happened. But then also, in one of the council meetings, there was a lady who came here and was they said she was cited, and then she went by, I think, all these homes had this enormous list and said, well, you missed all these other houses, and then you just got to my house. And so again, it has to be clear, a clear vision, and it has to be equal across the board. But also, the city attorney did say that we need some teeth, because there are times where, like there was a issue that happened within the last month, where there was a person who owned a home in the great state of Ohio, and you know, and they were here, you know, went here, and then they took, they were cited, and then they got they called in, they had like 2 months, and they didn't do anything, and then they engaged again, had another 3 months. And so in those type of situations, there's grace given on different occasions. Now, there's something wrong with you, you broke your leg, you're heartbroken because Michigan lost. I get that. All of that stuff, you need to be given maybe a level of grace, but it gives the committee an opportunity to consider it. And then it finally came before council, and then to either acknowledge the protest or deny the protest, and it was denied. And it was because they were given enough time. It makes sense in that case. And so I think we just need clear vision. We need to enforce, and we need to make sure that it's equal across the board.
Thank you, Trey. I wish we had more time for more questions. We could probably do another 3 hours here. There's enough questions to do that, but I don't think everybody wants to stay here another 3 hours. So we do need to wrap things up. Three of you think that there should be a change at the leadership in city government. One of you does not. Let's start with those who believe that they're... I'm assuming. So, starting with Mr. Guernsey, why does there need to be a new mayor in Port Huron?
Well, let me tell you a story about a man that lived in Port Huron a long, long time ago. His name was F.C. Shulman. I don't know if anybody's ever heard of him. He was a retired U.S. Navy admiral, four-star admiral. As a little boy, he lived in Port Huron. He was the commanding officer of the USS Independence during World War II in the South China Sea. His aircraft carrier got sunk on him. Usually, when that happens, you usually get demoted. But he got promoted and became in charge of the whole 5th Fleet of the U.S. Navy during World War II. His name's F.C. Shulman, and nobody even knows of him, and he's from Port Huron. I know our history. I know our issues in this town, and I'm focused on the future. I'm all around involved in this community, and I'm asking for your vote for that reason.
Terry Smith, why is it time for a new mayor in Port Huron?
In all honesty, I don't know if it's time for a new mayor.
Well, thank you, Terry.
Now, let me tell you why. The reason why I'm up here is because of one statement that came up that infuriated me, where the recovery community was considered, that issue going on was considered to be the same like the industry of Uber. People aren't products. We aren't dollars and cents. And I get that there was an analogy for something else, but I wanted to remind the people that people aren't products. And we have to remember not just the downtown, not just those who are fluent, not just business owners, but everyone. Whoever is in this seat, because this is so happened to be the seat of the mayor. This seat needs to represent all people and give all people hope. If we want to get rid of the opiate problem, we'll give people hope. If we do that in this community, that will change it. And I keep hearing people saying that it's the same problem across the United States. It's not. In Atlanta, people do it because it's recreational. In Miami, it's because it's something that comes normally from their culture. But here, and in my experience, it's happening because people are hopeless. They're trying to get out of this world of struggle and where they are. And whoever sits in this seat has the opportunity to bring hope, to bring compassion, and to bring all people together. Everybody in our city, and it's not 30,000 people in our city, it's 28,000 and some change. They need to be reminded and assured that they have a person who's fighting for them, who's going to give them a voice, and don't matter what the issue is, it's going to be taken seriously. And so to say we need a new mayor, I'm not sure, but I think we just need a new perspective on how to encourage people, because voting won't fix the problems that you're complaining about. You getting involved, you getting engaged, you working alongside of the city manager and the people in power, that's how we make a difference.
Scott Warden?
Is this our last final two?
This is it.
Is that how you presented it? Okay. Well, actually, of course, with my experience being on council and interacting and seeing how the things, how the process worked and the interactions, one of the biggest things why we need a new mayor and why Scott Warden for mayor is good for the people of Port Huron my age, 47 years old, and from the private sector my whole life, serving individuals and the community, interacting from people on the south side, downtown, north side, directly has a close connection to the openness and to the pulse and for their feedback. I've had hundreds and hundreds of people that communicate with me in my council term so far, and I'm not afraid to share it openly and share their concern or share their input with fellow council members and mayors with issues. I'm not afraid. I don't have to say yes to everything if it's not the best interest of the city of Port Huron. A current mayor that we currently have has been there for, this is 9 years, since I've been on council since 2016. She's not had one no vote on anything. She's approved every single thing on that, as far as that was up for an agenda item. Also look back to 2015 and 2014 when I was not on council. Also again, not one no vote for any issue, any item, any spending, any ordinance, or anything that came up. And if we're going to be representing the people of Port Huron, the businesses of Port Huron, the individuals, and they give feedback and they give concern or to share, there are going to be some things, and the mayor needs to be able to say, you know what, we might need to go another direction, or no, that's not for the best benefit of the, because the people have spoken. We're here to serve. And as a mayor, and promoting the city, it's going to be very, very positive. I'm probably one of the most positive people about Port Huron. Strongly continue to attract the private investment, private sector, and promote the greater Port Huron community. It's going to be very, very beneficial to change the dialogue from kind of muting and silencing some of the voices that have been heard that even come through council when we share. I don't think it should be criticized. I don't think it should be silenced. I think we should be open to that. I think we should be appreciative to that and have no problem to share that, hey, this is why we made this decision, even though we did consider these other concerns and considerations among council members and the people of Port Huron. We got to look forward to the future. The decisions today are going to affect us in the future. We need to reconnect and have the people of Port Huron, south side, north end, downtown, businesses, they need to have access and they need to feel connected and know that as the mayor and the city that we are representing their best interests and for the future and the progress. Thank you.
Scott. Pauline, is it time for a new mayor in Port Huron?
Well, obviously I don't think so. But I guess I'm too old. So I'm sorry, but that's
Jackie, you can quote her on that.
You can quote me on that, because I don't think that's the case. I think I'm very experienced. And you know, I guess I would say, and I did have remarks kind of written out, but I'm going to go kind of off the cuff a little bit more than I was going to. Voting no is not a qualifying factor. And yes, I have many conversations with the city manager before he brings something forward to us. And I have the opportunity to share my opinion and say whether or not I think, and I have told him many things that have never even made it to council that I didn't think would fly. So that is not a qualifying factor to say that you sit up here and say no. And first of all, I'm the last vote out of seven people. The mayor's position is one vote, as we've been saying all along. That is not something to criticize me for. I can tell you that I have many times, and I have kept track over the times that I have been in this position for 9 years. I forget sometimes that I'm not still working here because I put so many hours in. But for 9 years, I can tell you that I have never been but once the deciding factor in a vote. And I have paid attention to that. By the time it gets to me, it's pretty much a moot point. Because in a lot of communities, the mayor never votes. They only vote in the sense of a tiebreaker, and that's it. So the fact that I would or would not say no is really irrelevant. And I believe that I'm a very positive person, and I have done everything to promote this community, far more than some. And I belong to a lot of organizations. I belong to SEMCOG, Southeastern Michigan Council of Governments. I am at their meetings. I am at the Mayor's Association meetings. We have had conferences here in Port Huron because of my influence. I am out there in the community all the time. My family rarely sees me, and I probably put at least 25 hours a week. At most every event, I think you would be said that I was there. There is not, and I think even Trey would say that most events that are held, I'm there.
Most events.
Most events, yes. And I can't say all events. I can't say the same for everyone else. and I put my heart and soul in it. I hope people still continue to vote for me. I have invested a lot of time and energy in this community. I continue to want to do that. I have the energy, I have the desire, and I have the time. And I have never, ever ignored anybody's complaints, comments, or otherwise, up here, on the phone, the email, the weekend calls, or anything. So I don't think that you could really ask for someone else who is more dedicated than I am. So I hope you vote for Pauline Rep on November the 6th. Thank you.
Candidates, thank you very much. On behalf of the Blue Water Area Chamber of Commerce and WPHM Radio, thank you and good night.